Okay, imagine you're around someone that you really care about, then one day they say or do something that confuses you. Perhaps they blame you for something. They said you did something wrong or you're being difficult. And you thought you weren't being difficult, but you think, okay, maybe it's a misunderstanding, so you move on. Well, then it happens again. You know, maybe it's the same thing, maybe it's something else. And now you're thinking, wow, maybe I am doing something wrong. Imagine this happening over and over again, how it would affect you and how you think they perceive you. This is just a small part of what emotionally abusive behavior does. And if you find yourself on the receiving end of that, head over to loveandabuse.com and you'll learn so much more that will empower you and arm you with the right tools to make decisions that are right for you. loveandabuse.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges in the most emotionally intelligent way. I will do my best. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. I hope you are being well, and I hope you are mentally healthy or working your way toward it, like I am. I'm always stepping in that direction. I'm always going toward something, some sort of improvement, some sort of mental evolution. It's a journey. This is a journey we are on. And if you think that you are already there, then you probably don't need this show. And I've actually met people that they knew they were already there. I remember this one woman I worked with. She said, oh, yeah, I got all that down. And I thought, great. You know, back then I really didn't know a lot of this stuff that I teach now, but I didn't know how to respond to her. I've got all that down. I don't need to listen to any of this stuff. I don't need to talk about this stuff. I've got it totally under control. I'm good there. And that's great. I wouldn't knock that if it's true. I wouldn't knock that if it's working for you. In fact, I just wrote a lesson in Healed Being, the program I run. I'll tell you about it later. But one of my lessons, I said, do you have beliefs that serve you? And I think beliefs are an important part of how we make decisions. In fact, they're probably every part of how we make decisions, because in order to make the decision, we have to have a belief of some sort, or at least a hope, or possibly an expectation. And certainly all decisions, I believe, you know, talking about beliefs, all decisions, I believe, are based on values. What do you value most? This is how we make decisions. And some of us make decisions, choosing not to base them on beliefs or values or expectations. And then we wonder why life isn't going as well as it could or should. I personally make decisions based on what I value most. I've talked about this before, but I think it's important just to repeat it or reiterate a little bit here. How to make good decisions for your life is by aligning with what you value most so that you don't sabotage your own path or your own success. And something simple as, should I walk to the store or drive my car or ride my bike, could be a decision that you make based on your values. And I will give you an example. Let's just say that you value exercise really high on your list. Like, you value health and wellness and being fit and exercising, and it's high on your list. People who value that, that's certainly not my value. I mean, I value it, but not high on my list. I wish it was higher. But let's just say I did, or somebody out there does. when you value exercise and staying fit, you are more likely to walk or bike to the store if you are in walking or biking range. But a lot of people will do that. They'll forego driving a car and use something that meets their highest values in this small example. So the person who values fitness over, let's just say, convenience might be driving the car, but they always want to make sure that they're fit. They always want to make sure that everything they do is moving and eating right and just doing what they can to stay fit. And so they're more likely to bike or walk to the store. And when they do, they're going to be, I'm going to make an assumption, happier overall. People who align with their highest values and make decisions based on those highest values are typically happier overall. And then there are people that say, every time I'm about to do something I enjoy, I sabotage it. If I'm about to go on vacation, I do something that ruins it. Or I say something that ruins it, or we have a big fight and we don't go. Something always happens before something fun. And then it lowers the amount of fun. It lowers the quality of what I'm about to do. And I look at that as sabotaging your path to success or sabotaging your fun. And a lot of people will do this. They will make sabotaging decisions. And I look at values as the reason that they make sabotaging decisions or self-sabotaging decisions. So if you have a high value that maybe you're not aware of, when I say high value, I mean it's like at the top of your list or near the top of your list. If you have a high value, something way up there that you're not aware of, or maybe you're not conscious of or think about, or like I said, if you don't know what it is, you could be making decisions inadvertently, lining up with values that you don't realize you have, causing self-sabotage. Again, I've talked about this before. I don't want to bore you with all the details, but if you've never heard it, it's probably interesting. It might be. But I've learned that when I make decisions, if I bypass those values and see the shiny object in front of me instead of going by my values, I end up almost always following the wrong path and being unhappy, upset, or even worse, I'm just miserable. I'm in a miserable place. For example, I had a friend and I, and we decided to go into business together, just starting this business. And I realized about 2 or 3 weeks into the business that I wanted nothing to do with it. I was done. And I was afraid to tell him because we were both, or he thought we were both 100% passionate about it and in it. And I realized, I just don't want to do this. I don't want to do the work. I'm not interested in the work. I don't want to create this thing that we're doing. Wow, now I feel bad because now I have to tell this, I have to tell this guy that I don't want to do that anymore. And he can't do it by himself. So it basically either ends the business or he finds someone else. And so I struggled with that, struggled with telling him. And I finally decided to tell him. I said, I'm so sorry. I really hate to lay this on you, but every time I think about doing this work, I get sick to my stomach. I don't think I can do this. I know I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm so sorry because I know we had this thing in mind and I just can't follow through. And luckily he was a great guy and said, oh, I don't want you to be sick. Okay, we'll stop. That doesn't happen often. People usually get upset. What? All this investment? Why would you do this? But he prioritized. He prioritized our friendship. He prioritized my mental health and well-being. And it all worked out. It was great. We stopped it. And boy, when we stopped it, I felt so relieved. But I had to stop it because doing it was against my values. Doing what we were doing was against my values. And, I had back then, I really thought that Like money was my top value. We're going into business. I want to make money. That's going to be my top value. And after I started doing this business with him, I realized that money isn't my top value. In fact, what we're doing now, there's something that is more important. And it had to do with, I think, where I invest my time. And so time became a value to me when I started thinking about it. And my investment in time, where do I put my time? Where do I put my energy? That became more valuable to me than making money. And if I didn't appreciate or I couldn't appreciate what I put my time and energy and even money into to create in my life or in the world, then I didn't want to do it. So I believed that money was my main driver, my top value. And so I went into this business not thinking of other values and not thinking about what it will involve and how I'll feel about it. Because you can have millions of dollars, and if you're unhappy, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does a little bit, but it doesn't really matter because you want the money to enhance and enrich your life. But if it doesn't, you know, there are very well-known people that have hurt themselves or killed themselves, even though they were wealthy and they could afford the best therapy and all this stuff. But this is what happens. It doesn't matter. If your other values aren't met and you're driven by one value, but you don't address the other values, then this can happen. This is where sabotage happens. And so I believed my top value was money, and it wasn't. My top value had to do with investing my time and where I invested and the quality of life that I would have when I invested that. And, you know, if I'm spending 8, 10, 12, 16 hours a day doing something I don't like, money doesn't matter. If you gave me a $10 million check and I had to do 16 hours of stuff I didn't like every day, you know, somebody's listening right now saying, I'll do it. I know. I'll do it. I'll do it for a year. I don't care. That's what, you know, I'm hearing in my head, even from myself. I'll do that for a year. I'll do something I don't like for a year. But I couldn't give it up. I couldn't give up my time. You know, you could do that for a year and then get hit by a truck. After a year, suddenly, where did the year go? So this is where I started reevaluating my values about maybe 8 years ago. Started reevaluating what I really valued. And that changed my life. And I told myself that I will not make decisions out of alignment with my values. This, to me, has, again, changed my life. And I believe wholeheartedly, if you write down what's most important to you and you make decisions based on the top 1, 2, 3 values, that you will almost always be happier because of that. You will stay out of self-sabotaging decision-making. And I think that's important. So when we come back, I'm going to go right back to what I started to talk about, which was beliefs. Beliefs that serve us, beliefs that don't. I think it's important to understand our own beliefs so that we don't follow a path to destruction. We'll get into that in a moment. Be right back after this. So just today, my girlfriend is talking to her son, and she says, wait a minute, Paul, what's that service that you're going to talk about on the show? And I told her, ZocDoc.com/brain. And so she went to the site, and she starts looking around, and she said, oh my God, this is so easy. This is so easy. And I said, I know. That's why I'm going to talk about them on the show. This is called ZocDoc. It's an app that you can get for free. And you can start searching for a top-rated doctor in your insurance or not if you don't have insurance. But many are available within 24 hours. If you go to ZocDoc.com/brain, that's ZocDoc www.ahrefs.com/brain, you're going to be able to find every specialist under the sun. Whether you're trying to straighten your teeth or fix an achy back, or if you have moles on your body that you want checked out, ZocDoc has you covered. ZocDoc is a mobile app that's easy to use, and you can search, find, and book doctors with a few taps. Like I said, ZocDoc has real verified patient reviews, and it'll help you find the right doctor in your network and in your neighborhood. And just to finish what my girlfriend was saying, she said, you know, I go on my insurance website and finding a doctor is so hard. I'm telling you about ZocDoc. I want you to check them out. Go to ZocDoc.com/brain. That's ZocDoc.com/brain. And start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. And so I started to talk about beliefs. And if they serve you, then great. You're on the right path. If you are happy, if what you're doing, if the decisions that you're making, if the steps that you're taking make you happy or at least comfortable, or at least feel good in some way, if you feel like there's no resistance inside of you and it feels like a good path to be on, then don't change a thing. Don't change beliefs that are serving you. Now, what happens when you have beliefs that don't serve you? I believe it's the same thing that I was talking about with the values. If you are attached to beliefs that don't serve you, you end up being more unhappy than you are happy. Or maybe just generally unhappy. Or maybe anxious. Or maybe depressed. Maybe you will feel like you're going in the right direction, but you suppress all these negative thoughts and you repress all these negative emotions. And eventually, doing that over and over again, this is my formula for depression, it will lead to depression. Suppress your thoughts, repress your emotions, and then you're depressed. It's not the only way to depression, but it's certainly the way I got there when I was trying to heal from my breakup back in the early 2000s. I had a breakup from a very long-term, great, what I thought was a great relationship, but the last few years, it really started falling apart. And then when we broke up, she left, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know who I was without another person in my life. Who am I if I'm not us? What is my identity without this other person in my life? I know most people listening now have experienced this feeling. They may not have described it like that, but this is how I look at it. I mean, now, I didn't think about it this way back then, but now, as I reflected on this for many years, after a couple more breakups, a divorce included, I realized that I couldn't identify with myself and I wasn't comfortable with myself as me, as the quote, I am. I couldn't be comfortable with me because I didn't know who I was without someone else in my life. I was what my girlfriend calls a serial monogamist. I have to be in a relationship all the time. That was my MO. I just had to be in a relationship because I believed relationships were the key to happiness. I have learned that relationships enhance happiness, or they should. Relationships should enhance happiness. They should contribute to it. They should make life more fulfilling and enriching and of higher quality. And when they don't, this may be controversial, but they're not worth having. It's not worth having a relationship if it doesn't enhance your life in a positive way. Again, that's controversial. Not everyone's going to agree with that, but they should. You should agree with that, because if you're in a relationship that is toxic, dysfunctional, abusive, or you just feel lost or confused, or you're made to be responsible for all the problems and they have no problems and you're the problem. You know, a lot of emotionally abusive stuff in there. I talk about it at loveandabuse.com if you want to dive into that. But your life should be enhanced with a relationship. And also, and this is something else I learned, it shouldn't just be us. It should be me and you and us. The three of us. Three entities, me, you, and us. Because I'm going to go work on my woodworking project in the basement, and you're going to work on the computer or read a book, and then later we can get together and do something together. We have three separate entities here. And I think that when each of you support the other person's individuality and you work together and take a responsibility for your role in the relationship, then the whole thing can work out great. Not everybody has that. Some people listen to this show to make that happen. And I hope it works. I hope that happens for you if you're in a relationship or you're trying to build one or get one or whatever it is. Using this formula can be very helpful. And I brought this up because I used to think that happiness came from being in a relationship. But I've learned since that it's important to find happiness as a person, as you, before you get into a relationship, so you can bring your happy, high quality self into a relationship and enhance it. What I used to do is drain it from the relationship and the other person. Yes, I was toxic. I drained happiness from my partners in life. Not today. I hope I don't. I don't think she is being drained. She seems very happy around me, which is great. I always look forward to being with her, and neither of us are a drain on each other. But in my previous relationships, that's what would happen, is I would be a drain on my partner because I used her as the sole source of my happiness. I brought her happiness down to raise mine. How did I do that? I was clingy. I was jealous. I was possessive. I just drained from her her life force, her energy, her passion for life. They became depressed in some ways. Maybe not diagnosably, but you could see their decline. I am not proud of this. I am very saddened that I was this person. But I didn't know who else to be back then. If you've done this to somebody, you didn't know any better. Because if you did, you wouldn't have done it. I didn't know any better. Because if I did, I wouldn't have done it. I prioritized my own wants and needs over someone else's. I prioritized my own happiness over someone else's. I made what I wanted more important than their peace, comfort, happiness, or ability to do anything they wanted as an individual themselves. I helped to strip away their individuality, their spirit, their happiness. So, I say all this because I'm talking about beliefs where we can have beliefs that don't serve us. And my belief was that happiness came from someone else. Happiness can come from someone else. I'm not denying that. But it should be used as an enricher. It should be an enhancer. Somebody else should be seen as someone that can enrich your life and enhance your life and make life more pleasant than it already is. And not all of us are there, even when we're alone. You know, I understand. Sometimes being alone is depressing. It's sad. Sometimes being alone is boring. Sometimes you just want to watch a movie with a friend, a companion, a lover, a partner, a spouse. Sometimes you want that. I know I did when I was alone. I did that so often in my life that when someone would break up with me, it always happened that way, someone would break up with me, then I would be alone. My next pursuit was the next person in my life. And I would be focused on that. I'm going to focus on getting the next person in my life because that is the only way to happiness. Again, here I am. Somebody's going to drain the next person because that is, I hate to say it if you've experienced this, but it's dysfunctional thinking. And it can be toxic to a person. And it's draining to a person, like I said. So what I did when I was single was show up as a wonderful person in my mind. And for the first few months, I was wonderful to them as well. But then the leeching began, and I slowly leached their energy. I didn't know who I was back then, and it took a lot of healing and a lot of reflection and a lot of empathy to get into a space to be able to look at the person that I'm supposed to love and realize that I'm hurting them and it's my fault, and they're not unhappy because they're making the wrong decisions in life. They're unhappy because I'm taking away their ability to make decisions for themselves. I mean, that was one of the reasons. They're unhappy because I am always around them. I'm hovering over them. I'm clingy. I'm possessive. I'm jealous. And I didn't want them to hang out with friends because that meant taking time away from me. It was a very, very toxic situation for my partners. And, you know, I hate to bash myself when I tell these stories because I was nice too. I was kind and supportive and generous, I believe. Maybe somebody will say, no, that's not true. But I really believe I was other things too. But it doesn't matter, really. I mean, I could have been nice and kind and generous and supportive 90% of the time. I could have been this wonderful partner 90% of the time. But that 10% that drains them, what it ends up doing is making their quality of life worse over time. It's not like I'm draining them 10% on Tuesday and they go back to 100% on Wednesday. You know, so they're 90% on Tuesday and they're like, oh, you're so draining. But on Wednesday, they're back at 100%. No, they might be at 99% on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, because I drained them again at one point in the day, maybe, they're at 98%. And then next week, they're at 96%. And then next year, they're at 86%, you know, as far as quality of life and feeling good about themselves and feeling comfortable in their own skin and feeling like they can be themselves around me. And so that drain takes place in another person when we show up with any kind of dependency on something that's missing, you know, dependency on them for something that's missing in us. This is what happens when we haven't done some healing in ourselves. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we can't heal everything. I believe it's possible, but sometimes we can't. You know, the belief that serves me is that we can heal from everything, you know, mentally, emotionally. That's my belief. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure that I travel down every single path till exhaustion to try to heal what's going on inside of me. This is what I'm conveying you today, is that sometimes you have to travel down every single path to try to heal or improve yourself in some way so that, and I think this is probably the most important part, not only you heal it and resolve it and let it go in yourself, but you don't bring it into somebody else's life. Because when we bring something that we haven't healed in ourselves into someone else's life, it doesn't always affect the relationship or it doesn't always affect them, but there's a good chance that it will. And when that happens, we just have to be careful to differentiate our issues from theirs and not make our issues theirs. So they have their issues, we have our issues. Let's not make our issues theirs, and let's hope that they don't make their issues ours. The question is, how do you do that? How is it possible? Because when we're with somebody, or at least when we're with somebody that we care about, that we feel safe around, that we feel more trusting around, that we're more vulnerable with, then we are more likely to open up and be who we are, or be more of who we are, be more authentic. When we're with around somebody that we feel more safe with, more trusting with, that maybe we've even been intimate with, then we're more likely to be more authentic around them, which means, what does that mean? You know what this means. That means that your filters are down and you're not putting on a different face like you would for the general public. You're putting on your real face, which means if you have a lot of anger inside of you, You probably wouldn't necessarily show that to the general public, but if it's in there, it's gonna come out around somebody that you feel most vulnerable around. And vulnerable can be a great thing, because when you feel vulnerable, that means you feel safe with somebody and safe to be yourself. And also you feel safe to be more authentic, and you feel safe that because you are yourself, they're not going to judge you or criticize you. So that allows us to be more vulnerable. But if you're around somebody that can hurt you while you're vulnerable, that creates an issue. At the same time, and this is where I started to go, is that when you have something inside you that's unresolved, the more vulnerable you feel with somebody, the more likely that's going to come out, which is why I say it's so important to try to heal and resolve what you're holding on to, what's lingering, before you get into a relationship. Now, this doesn't mean you don't get into a relationship until everything's healed. I can't imagine going through life ever trying that. I can't imagine looking at my life, assessing everything that maybe I need to work on still, and say, well, no, not everything is healed yet, so I can't get into a relationship. I would never put that on you. That's not fair. I would never put that on me. That's not fair, because relationships can be great. Even a friendship, even companionship, these can be great. Romantic relationships, even better when it is. But if we have some unresolved stuff that we introduce into the relationship and we make it a relationship issue, and we make our issues their issue, which isn't always something we do consciously, that's when the problems can start, and stuff I've already talked about, where we can start to drain the other person. Coming back to beliefs, did my belief that happiness came from someone else serve me? I had to ask myself that question. And after my divorce, I finally answered that question the right way. No, happiness does not come from that person. It should not come from that person. I was so clingy and possessive and jealous when I was younger, and then I really thought I matured in my marriage, and I grew up in my marriage. You know, I became more emotionally mature, I believe. At least that's what it seemed like I was doing, but I still had issues, and it still caused problems. But I learned after the divorce that, man, I spent so much time trying to control and change and make outcomes the way I wanted them to be. And because of that, it decreased the quality of the relationship daily, which means if it was 1% on day one, it was 2% on day 10, it was 10% on year one, it was 50% on year eight, meaning the quality of the relationship decreased by percentages every week, month, and year that passed. Because I had a belief that happiness comes from another person. And if happiness came from the other person, then I had to do whatever I thought I had to do to make that other person make me happy. That's emotionally abusive. It's controlling. It's manipulating. It's trying to get outcomes regardless of their happiness, regardless of their comfort, regardless of what they want. I wanted what I wanted regardless of what she wanted. And that made me controlling and abusive. And so after the divorce, which is probably the best thing that could have happened to me, because it was the biggest realization of my life, reflecting on my entire life of relationships, looking back and seeing that I was this person the way I was, that was a problem. You know, I believed the person I was to be a good, kind, supportive, generous, caring, loving person. But in reality, that belief was wrong. In fact, that belief didn't serve me. Again, I started questioning what I believed. In fact, I started questioning everything I believed to be right. I started saying I might be wrong about that. I started believing I might be wrong about that. And in fact, if I'm going to give you anything today to walk away with today, I want you to reflect on what you believe to be 100% right, and just tell yourself, there's a chance I could be wrong about that. That's very hard to do sometimes. Well, I have this belief, but there's a chance I could be wrong about that. Well, you know, beliefs are something to question, right, Paul? Well, no, some people take beliefs as truth. When I started doing this, when I said there's a chance I could be wrong about that, I finally started questioning my own behaviors and realizing that I had been living inside a box with a belief system that I thought was so accurate or so sound that everyone else must be wrong because it doesn't fit in my belief system. If my belief system is that somebody shouldn't do something I don't like, can I tell myself or can I ask myself, is there a chance I could be wrong about that? I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be wrong about someone doing something I didn't like. In my relationships, I didn't want to be wrong about that. I wanted what I wanted regardless of what they wanted. If you're still listening after knowing this about me, I am very grateful. I appreciate you. I am humble in your presence. But I did a lot of healing. I had to go through my own pain. I had to go through all these breakups, and it hurt. I was depressed. I felt so sick to my stomach after I finally developed some empathy. And I mean, I had empathy, but I really laid it on thick and put myself in their shoes and asked myself, how would I feel if they did that to me? And suddenly I was ready to vomit because I would never want to be treated the way I treated them back then. But that helped me reflect. That helped me understand what I needed to heal in myself. That helped me understand that my belief system was flawed. Can you say that about your own belief system? Should you? Should you question it? Is your belief system flawed? Do you have flaws? Everybody has flaws, Paul. I know, but do you have a belief that maybe doesn't serve you, that might be sabotaging your path to success or happiness? Do you believe something so much that everyone around you is affected, but not in a good way? I mean, that opens up a different can of worms, but this is what happens, is that we notice our quality of life, our connections, our work, when our beliefs and our values and even our personal boundaries, when we're not in alignment with these things, this is what happens. Our world starts to fall apart, and we can either try to control everything, let's control all these aspects of the world, or start to say, maybe I have a belief that no longer serves me. Am I willing to be wrong about certain beliefs? Am I willing to question certain beliefs? Am I willing to look at the things that people did to me that I blamed them for? Am I willing to look at those things that people did to me in my past and then ask myself, is it possible that I could be wrong about what I believed back then? You know, you might say, no, I'm 100% right. You could say that. I'm all for it because I'm only looking for beliefs that don't serve you. That doesn't mean every time you question a belief, it's going to be something that turns out to be wrong and you shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. No, you're going to find out what's right for you as well. You're going to find out that believing this has worked for me, and this is where I started. When beliefs serve you, you don't have to change those. But I do believe that being open-minded enough to say something like, it's possible I could be wrong, especially when things aren't going right in your life. Yeah, but I know this is true. I know it. Well, are you willing to let go of the attachment to being right about what you believe? Are you willing to be wrong? Are you willing to allow yourself, your ego, to take the hit and tell yourself, you know, it's possible I am wrong about that. And here's the second part of this, or third or fourth. Are you willing to admit that you've been going in the wrong direction, not only to yourself, but maybe to others? Maybe telling them all this time, this is what I believed. And it's not helping. It's not right. It might even be wrong. And I think I need to change this belief. I can imagine myself 10 years ago. That would be so hard. to say, you know, I've believed this most of my life, and I have been doing it this way most of my life because of this belief. And then to express what you believed and let them know that you were wrong, or you might be wrong. Just that little step into a little bit of ego crushing, not crushing, but it's going to take a hit. Ego is that identity of yourself. Remember the self. It's me, it's I. And in a relationship, the self becomes I and us, or at least it should not just be us. There has to be an I, and there has to be an I for them too. They have to be an I, they have to be a me. And then we have an ego that comes in and says, I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to look like a fool. I don't want to appear weak. Do you realize the most attractive thing on a person is when they're willing to admit they're wrong? That may not be what you value in another person, but boy, when I hear it from someone, that makes my heart warm. That makes me look at them in an entirely different way. When my girlfriend tells me that she was wrong about something, do you think I go into attack mode? Do you think I put her down? Do you think I point my finger at her and say, I knew it. I told you so. I might feel like doing that in a tiny, tiny way. But I don't, because I know how vulnerable she is when she puts herself in that space. And not only does it make me connect with her and strengthen the bond between us, but it makes me trust her more. And it makes me realize that I have someone very special to be able to be that vulnerable with me, that she is willing to show that she is wrong. She is willing to say that her belief was incorrect. That is huge. For anyone to do that with you is huge. When someone is vulnerable with you, if you open up the space to allow them to be vulnerable with you, then you increase the relationship bond. Now, that may not be your goal, but it could be. If you want to increase the quality of a relationship, vulnerability is extremely attractive, at least to me. That's something I value. So that plays into beliefs that serve you and making decisions that are in alignment with your values and on and on and on, everything I talked about today. And when you keep all of this in mind, it can really help you make smart decisions for yourself, for your life. It can really help you learn what to reflect on and what you need to let go of. And again, it's not always easy to let go of things. You have to go through healing. You have to work on this stuff. That's why I think it's so important that before you get into a relationship, you improve yourself as much as possible so you bring the best version of yourself into the relationship. But even after you get into the relationship, I mean, we've all entered relationships, I'm going to make an assumption, with some dysfunctions, and those dysfunctions came out in the relationship. But even when you're in a relationship, come back to yourself. Continue to work on yourself. Continue to improve yourself. In my Healed Being program over at healedbeing.com, I help emotionally abusive people work on themselves. I help them focus on themselves. This is something I learned after my marriage ended. I have to focus on myself, because if I keep my focus on anyone else, that is when I try to control them. And it's also taking my focus away from where it needs to be, on my own healing. It's one of my lessons over there. Focus. You have to focus on yourself. As soon as you put your focus on them, you're thinking, okay, how do I change them? How do I get them to do what I want them to do? How come they're not doing what I want them to do? How come they're being awful? Maybe it's reversed. Maybe they're hurtful to you. How come they're being so awful? You got to focus on yourself. What do you want? What do you value? Are you making decisions that are in line with those values? Are you in a relationship that is in alignment with your values? These are all important questions that I probably ponder day and night and dream about. And it's not that I'm struggling with them. It's because I teach this stuff too. I have to think about it all the time. And it's important. it's just important to reflect upon them every now and then. But this is what happens, is that as you increase your quality of life and increase your peace and comfort and your happiness or whatever you're striving or thriving for, what happens is you don't revisit your values anymore because they become part of your life. You don't have to visit your boundaries. You don't have to visit your values. You don't have to say things like, maybe I'm wrong, because if everything's working out, if all your beliefs serve you and all your decisions are coming out pretty darn okay, with the occasional misstep every now and then, but you're overall happy about things, then this is what happens. You don't have to question all these things that go on in your life. You just accept them and move on. Hey, this is great. I'm moving on. I just had a conversation with a former client of mine the other day about gratitude. And she said, I don't want to wake up sometimes and say, I'm grateful. I said, I totally get it. I totally get it. I said, I'm not the kind of person that forces myself to be grateful when I'm not feeling it. And somebody might look at me and say, but you can breathe, you can see, you can hear, you have two legs, you have two arms, all your organs work and you're healthy. And they can say all this stuff that I could absolutely think about and be grateful for. And I often am, but we're told, some people tell us, that we should wake up every morning and say, I am so grateful to be alive. I'm so grateful to wake up. I'm so grateful that I have my vision. I'm so grateful I have fresh water. All of these things that, you know, a lot of us benefit from is wonderful, and I am absolutely grateful for it when I think about it. But I was telling her, and she was pretty much expressing the same to me. It's like, sometimes I don't want to say it. Sometimes I don't want to say the words, I am grateful for everything, because I don't feel it. And I said, I totally get you. I am on board with that, because as soon as I force gratitude inside my mind and my body, and it is not what I'm feeling in the moment, it's like I'm BSing myself, and then I feel bad. That's it. If I don't feel grateful in the moment, you know, maybe I didn't have a good night's sleep and I'm still trying to wake up, I might not feel grateful in the moment. And I told myself, you know what? It's okay if I don't. It's okay if I don't feel grateful in this very second. And I've learned, I'm not going to force gratitude. I'm not going to force appreciation. I'm going to allow it to be if it is. And I just don't want to force anything that isn't congruent inside of me, that I don't feel aligned with in the moment. And I'm here to say that I've had so many moments where I feel so grateful. They're usually quieter moments. They're usually moments where I have time to reflect. My girlfriend and I were eating at a coffee shop the other day, and I looked at her and I said, you know, we're so lucky. We're so lucky that we have this available to us. We have time to do this. We have money to do this. We have food that's served to us. There's so much to be grateful for, and this just came out of the blue. And I look at times like that and realize, yes, I experience gratitude. I feel so good in those moments, and they're so special, and they last. If I were to force that upon myself on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. I mean, I've tried the gratitude journal. I may have actually talked about it on the show before. I woke up and I wrote down what I was grateful for, but it didn't last because I couldn't get into that space in the moment I needed to get into that space. I don't want to force gratitude on me. So I let that go because it didn't serve me. And now when I feel gratitude, oh my God, it feels amazing. But it comes on its own. And I believe it has to. So that's my belief. It may not work for you. You may have a different belief and a different set of beliefs, and that's fine with me. If they're working for you, don't change a thing. Always do what works. And I'm just going to wrap this up. That's all I wanted to say today. No emails. I had an email in mind, and I might read something at the end. I don't know. But I'm grateful that you listen. Am I grateful? Yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that you listen today. I appreciate you. I'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons of the week, who I am very grateful for. Holly, Brad, Angel, Crystal, Nathan, Jamie, I appreciate each and every one of you. I am so grateful for you. You keep the show going. You know, you're not the only ones. I mean, it takes a lot more, but you know what I mean. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so much for valuing the show enough to give back. I am honored you do that. And if you are listening now and you value what I do over here and you want to give back, you can head over to moretob.com. And there are options to do that, and you can join the patron program or give a one-time donation. Totally up to you. Just want to let you know that's available. Thank you, patrons. I appreciate all of you. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, you heard me talk about it earlier, go to loveandabuse.com. That is my other podcast that I've been doing since 2019. And I think that's important. If you are in a difficult relationship, you're trying to navigate through the difficulties of maybe a dysfunctional or toxic situation, that's going to be a very helpful show for you. loveandabuse.com. And if you discovered that you are the difficult one, like I did after many breakups, head over to healedbeing.com. I went through healing. I went through a lot of it. And I tell you exactly in that course how I did it. And I believe it's worth it. The first four lessons are free. No credit card required. Head over to healedbeing.com. And I think your life will change. I think it's a life-changing program, and I believe it's so worth it if you are ready to heal and change behaviors that don't serve you. Head over there if you need that. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I think I am going to mention something that I received in an email. It was a long email, but the very end said, this person wrote, said, you know, there's a part of me that likes to be controlled. And she said she was going to write me a second email, and I never got the second email. But I saw that line. I thought, that's an interesting comment to make. It doesn't surprise me too much, because I'm going to make an assumption that somebody who appreciates that probably appreciates some sort of structure that helps someone make decisions for them. I might be wrong about this person especially, but this is what I think of. If you have a feeling of wanting to be controlled, it could be related to wanting to be guided, wanting to know what to do next because it's hard to make decisions or the right decisions. Sometimes wanting to be controlled is just having a good infrastructure in place that tells you what to do. Maybe it's not about being controlled. Maybe it's just about knowing what to do next. And that's why some people will take jobs that say, this is your job. I want you to do A, B, C, D, and take a lunch break, and then do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, all the way to Z, and then you can go home. Some people will hear that and they think, oh, that sounds perfect because they're telling me what to do. I take a lunch break and then I do the rest and then I go home and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to think about it at all. I don't want to think. I want somebody else to think for me. I want them to make the rules so that I don't have to make the rules, or I want to follow the rules. I don't want to have to think about them. And that's, some people are like that. Perfectly okay. You know, I don't mind being guided in certain areas of life. When I walk into a big room of people and I don't know what to do, where to sit, who to talk to, and somebody walks over and says, hey, I'm Joe. I'm going to help you find your seat, and I'm going to give you this material, and we're going to work with this material. And about 15 minutes, somebody's going to come on stage and they're going to present this thing, and you can ask questions if you want. And then we're going to take a lunch break at noon. And, you know, after that, we're going to have a chit chat and then the rest of the seminar, whatever. When I do that, when I walk into a room and somebody comes over and says, this is what you need to do, go ahead and do it. Well, they don't tell me what to do, but this is what you can do now. You can go sit and here's the material. I feel more comfortable. That's where I'm getting at. I feel more comfortable because I don't want to make this decision. What do I do? Now I have to search for someone. It's nice to be led sometimes. It's nice to be led by someone that knows what they're doing, that has the structure in place for me to follow. there is an outline to follow, and I'm just going to do it. This feels good. So it can work. It does work often. It has to work. There's a lot of people that work for other people that if this doesn't work, the system falls apart. So it has to work, and a lot of people appreciate that. So this person who wrote says, you know, sometimes I like to be controlled, or I don't mind being controlled. I think that, and I'm just making the assumption that it's probably less about being controlled, because if you're controlled by the wrong person, you're not going to like it. It's not going to be fun for you at all. But there is a sense of comfort that can come when there is a preset framework or some organization to things. Like maybe our life isn't so organized. Maybe it's a little chaotic. Then we walk into a place that's organized and we feel more relaxed. So I don't see that as control. I might be wrong, you know, with this person, what they're saying. I like to be controlled, or sometimes I like to be controlled. I do think that for the most part, if you feel that way, I might be wrong with some people, but if you feel that way, it's probably a sense of comfort that you get from having some sort of framework in place to follow, some sort of rules to follow. It's like Cesar Millan. I read his book. I forget what it's called, but he's the dog whisperer. That's what people call him. And his story is he came from Mexico, and in Mexico, dogs are a part of their family, just like they are in the U.S., but they're outside and they treat dogs like dogs. They treat dogs like part of the pack. You're part of the pack and you have certain jobs to do. When Caesar moved to America, he said it was the first time he ever experienced neuroticism in dogs. He said he's never seen anxiety and neuroticism in dogs. I don't think he called it neuroticism. He said they were neurotic. They had mental issues. And he realized that a lot of people treat their dogs like roommates and friends and sisters and brothers and sons and daughters. And he knew that that was actually causing some dogs to behave in ways that were undog-like. They were uncomfortable in their own skin. And so I started learning about, you know, dogs and dog training and realizing that dogs actually feel more comfortable in a structured, disciplined environment. Before you write in and say, I'm a dog trainer and that's not... Before you say anything, I'm just making this example. And maybe it's not true for every dog, but in my experience and what I've read, dogs appreciate a structure of discipline. That doesn't mean you're a bad dog. It means sit, wait. Okay, now you can eat. It's almost like they feel comfortable knowing what to do, just like I was saying here. Dogs feel comfortable. Most dogs, I believe, feel more comfortable knowing what they need to do. Otherwise, if they have no structure and no discipline, and they're allowed to run around the house and jump on the furniture and jump on people and lick them and run free anytime they want, and when you take them for a walk, they're like 30 feet ahead of you, they are out of the pack. They are their own pack leader, and they might act in ways that are not very dog-like or not very disciplined. And If it's working for you, if you're a dog owner and that works for you and nobody's complaining about it and the dog seems happy and you seem happy, great, don't change a thing. But if they're anxious while you're gone, if they pee on the carpet, if they do weird things that you wish they wouldn't do, there might be a lack of discipline. This isn't a dog training show at all. I'm not trying to tell you how to raise your animals. I'm just saying this is what I read, and it made sense that some people feel this way too. Some people need structure like this. And this is what Cesar Millan found out. He found out that as he started training dogs, their neuroticism decreased and eventually went away because they felt comfortable again. They were treated like a dog, not like a person. And dogs like that, from what I read. Most dogs like that. They like to be treated as a dog. And that means a number of things. Again, not going to get into that, but if you're interested in reading about that, I think he's a great teacher. Some people don't agree with his teachings, but find someone that you agree with. And that can be helpful if you're a dog owner. But I'm bringing this back to the people. Some people like the structure and the discipline involved because it makes them feel comfortable in their own skin. It makes them feel like they know what to do now. There's no question that they know what to do, and they're just going to do it. And it just feels good to them to have this structure in place. And when it is, there's no question what they need to do. Some people don't have like quick decision-making abilities, and some people don't even want to think too much when they're doing things. They just want to know what to do so they're not doing it wrong, so they don't have to feel wrong, so they don't have to feel bad. On and on. So that's my only thought about someone who might like to be controlled or feel controlled. It might have to do with that. And, you know, there's also, what do they call it? S&M. What is it? BDSM? I don't know the terms too well, but dominant and submissive. There are people that like to be controlled that way too. Personally, I think it still has to do with wanting structure in your life, and maybe there's some gratification feeling controlled. I'm not an expert in that. I'm not going to talk about that, but I'm not going to leave the elephant in the room standing there without saying something. So if you feel like being controlled for that and it's working for you, I'm not here to put that down or talk about it because I don't know about it, but by all means, go for it. That's not my thing, but it could be your thing. So that's all I have to say about that. I want to thank that person for writing. I know she wrote a long email and I just didn't have time to get to it. But I may talk about other aspects of it some other time. But glad you showed up today. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And just remember to always keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power and create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.